Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. Before we get started, I have a disclaimer for you. This conversation is messy, a little bit cursy, and possibly comical at times, but it's also extremely relevant and helpful for you and your business. From the very first question, you're going to see that this goes completely off the rails, but here it is. I'm giving it to you in all of its unedited glory. My guest today is a triple Pisces, marketing and growth coach, and a smart entrepreneur. She is the founder of ItiBiz, where her and her team turn smart, quirky people into smart, quirky entrepreneurs. She's been coaching and teaching online marketing since 2006 and has been featured in major outlets such as Forbes, Cosmopolitan, and USA Today. Plus, her email newsletter has attracted over 50,000 subscribers from across the globe. Now, let's hack Naomi Dunford. I want you to tell me, and to be honest, does your website stress you out? I absolutely love the power of WordPress, but I have to admit that choosing the right hosting, the plugins, the themes, all of that, there's a ton to think about when all we really want is a website that's fast, secure, and just looks really good. I want to introduce you to StudioPress Sites. It's the answer to all of your website headaches. StudioPress Sites is a proven solution that gives you the ease of an all-in-one website builder, but with the flexible power of WordPress. It's perfect for bloggers, podcasters, and affiliate marketers, as well as those selling physical products, digital downloads, and membership programs. With StudioPress Sites, you get the ease of that all-in-one website builder. You get the absolute necessity of having a mobile-friendly site done for you. There's 20 mobile-optimized designs included in your account. You're going to get smart content and included SEO tools, from keyword research to patented content analysis and optimization technology, plus trusted plugins and easy setup and testing, including one-click install of all their included plugins. There's zero hosting hassles. This is one of my favorite parts. You sign up and you're set up in minutes without the hassle of installing WordPress, buying a theme, or sorting out the best plugins. Plus, included security and maintenance features that keep your site safe and fast. Yes, StudioPress Sites is designed to be easy and hassle-free, but you can also rest assured that if something does go off the rails, the friendly StudioPress support team is standing by 24/7 to assist you in getting back on track. If you're ready to see for yourself why over 200,000 website owners trust StudioPress, the industry standard for premium WordPress themes and plugins, just go to studiopress.com/hack. Check out all the innovative features today. And as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you're going to get your first month absolutely free. Once again, that's studiopress.com/hack. We're back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today, I know I say this a lot, that we have a very, very special guest, but holy man, we really, really, truly do right now.
We really do.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm so damn happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Cool.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
How long have you had this show?
2.5 years.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Oh, wow. I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking the exact same thing. I have no idea how you haven't been on here earlier.
Yeah, me neither.
But if you had been, then we wouldn't be doing this right now.
Unless you had me back because I was so great.
This is true. All right, Naomi, let's jump into this.
Okay, let's do this.
You are a woman who wears many hats, I believe, but today we're talking to you, the entrepreneur.
Sounds cool.
Naomi, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I hate that question.
I know. I know you do. I was thinking about this last night. It's like, I know she's going to hate this question, but she's getting it anyways. I was like, should I change the question? No, I'm not changing the question for Naomi.
Okay, no, folks at home, can I tell you a little story? Okay. How these interviews work is that John, 2.5 years too late, asks you to be on his show and you say yes. And then he sends you like a little intro pack thing with some ideas as to like what you're going to talk about. And then you go and you pick a time in his like little scheduling thing. And I picked the latest possible time that I could possibly work practically because of this question. Because I was like, it's going to take me 3 weeks to figure out an answer to this question. So just a little behind the scenes for you here.
I've been thinking about this for 3 weeks.
I have. Really.
This is serious pressure now. All right.
It is. I was actually just going to refuse to answer, but I figured that wasn't playing the game right. The reason that I take issue with this question is because I think asking someone who was still in the process of succeeding, I guess, doing, working, asking that question sort of, it doesn't take into account that they're still in the midst of a vignette. And I'm like, I could give you an answer today that wouldn't be true tomorrow. Like, I don't know when this interview is going to go live, but it breaks my head. But I will tell you my answer that I came up with over the course of 3 weeks. And that is, I think I have an unusual ability to change course when I realize I'm wrong.
Whoa. An unusual ability to change course when you know that, or you find that you're wrong.
When I realize or find, or like when the pixies come into my brain while I sleep and go, Naomi, by the way, can I swear on this show?
Yeah, okay. You wouldn't be on here otherwise.
Okay. When the pixies come and tell me, Naomi, you're full of shit and you have been for many years. That's my answer.
Okay. We might get into that. Let's get into this. Let's get into this. This
that was so awkward.
Yeah, well, you've made it such, so let's just go with it. This idea of you're not a success yet and how this is going to change tomorrow. Would you agree that entrepreneurship, like life, it's a process of creation, right?
Yes.
Of creating things out of nothing, but also creating yourself out of nothing.
Yeah.
Therefore, ever evolving, and therefore constantly, like, I don't care if I interview Elon Musk and he's literally trying to go to the freaking moon, he still doesn't see himself as a success. So it's not your game.
He doesn't see himself as done. Whereas like if you had a biographer coming in, they would have the outside perspective of being able to say what has led to your success. But anybody who's still doing anything doesn't, I don't think they necessarily frame it that way in their mind. They don't frame it as the past tense. It's still so current that objectivity just goes to hell.
Right. So is your issue with the question the fact that it's that success in there, that word that you don't like, and seeing yourself and identifying as that? Or is it like really putting yourself in this time and place?
I think it's a time and place thing. It's hard for me to view something as having already happened. So I'm a terrible interview guest. I'm sorry.
Really? It's... So how do you create something like a product if you don't have the ability to see something already completed?
Rephrase the question.
Well, because you said you have a struggle with trying to see things as already being done. In this sense, we're talking about success, but in the sense of just creating something that doesn't exist and you must be able to see it as finished, and then you can kind of break it down and complete those steps to finish it.
Yeah, I think I can do that.
And the same thing, right?
Yeah, I think I can do that. And I think if you, you know, if you could somehow make it granular enough for my small mind to grok onto, then I could probably tell you why the last blog post I wrote was a success or not, as the case may be.
Right.
But no, I understand the point of your question, and that is the answer that I can best arrive at.
Unusual.
That was my attempt to play the game.
Unusual ability to change course when you realize or find that you are wrong. Fair enough. And adapt and not get sort of knocked off course or like hiding under your covers for the next 2 weeks because you found out you were wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I have a very rapid process of just, it's like I process how completely and totally wrong I was about something. Like Instagram or teleseminars or Facebook ads or whatever. And I just like super rapidly process that I was completely full of shit and then I could just move on very quickly. And I think that, yes, I like the way you said that. It makes it less likely that I'm just going to sit under my covers. I do sit under my covers and I hide and cry, usually not out loud, but in my head and totally go through this like mourning process and like go through the whole like five stages of grief / hating yourself very quickly. And then I go on and go, okay, well, we're here now. And then I go on Instagram or I do teleseminars or whatever.
Is this something sort of innate within you? Have you always been able to accept this total mess up and carry on? Or is this something you've realized you need?
I think it's always been there. I think I break up with concepts very easily and ideals and schemas and stupid judgments of things. Once like the penny drops and I go, wow, I'm so wrong. And then I can just move on. I think it's always been there.
Do you move on as quickly from, I don't want to call them like wins. I don't want to say that weird S success word because you don't like it. But do you also, like, do you pat yourself on the back? You launch, you create something, you think it's right, you launch it and it works. Or do you just move past it just as quickly as a failure?
It's a tough question. I have ADD. Shocker, I know.
Yeah, we all do at this point. Everyone on this show, I think, does.
So by the time something is launched, I've so moved past even the thing. Like I just have to, at the beginning of a new project, I have to throw myself into it. Just body, soul, blood, sweat. Because I know that if I don't capture that early momentum, then I'm just going to be like, squirrel, let's do Facebook ads. And I'm gone. And I know that about myself. And so I put so much into it on the front end that by the time it actually launches, I'm three projects ahead. I don't even really remember it.
Interesting. So this is a really popular sort of conversation that comes up on this show because lots of us get to be like this. Lots of us, it stops us from ever doing anything. And they never get to this stage where you've been in business for 10 years, Naomi. How have you like sort of, how do you manage it enough to accomplish the things you need to accomplish without just like squirrel, shiny object, just and never actually do anything?
It takes a lot of short-term discipline. I cannot pull off long-term discipline, but I can pull it off in short chunks. And I can just like, I know the flaws in my brain well enough now that I know that I have to take that, I call it a whirlpool, that sort of whirlpool moment of being able to put your total focus and energy onto a project. And I know that if I just like give it my absolute everything, that by the time I'm like, let's drink champagne and get pedicures, it will have taken on enough momentum that even if I totally suck, even I can finish it.
Yeah. And does the project itself, let's stick on this project. So I'm fascinated by projects with you because you seem to create a lot of them, like a lot of products and projects, probably for outreach and finding new listeners. Maybe you have projects that you want to start, but then also products that you sell.
I make a crazy, stupid, ridiculous amount of products. This is true.
Right. It's fascinating to me because this is crazy, but I literally don't have any products. And it's like I want to create that one first perfect product for my audience and I don't have it. And you create them nonstop. You come into my inbox and it's just like, Jesus Christ, how does she? She's got another product. That's amazing.
That woman is selling something again. Mm-hmm. Jesus.
So Where are these coming from? Where's the ideas coming from behind a product?
Can I answer that in a very roundabout way?
Yeah, of course. I'd love you to.
I think everybody has tons of ideas for products, but they're not in the habit of making them. And so they don't really have, their neurons are not conditioned to taking something that is an idea and starting to create an iteration and an execution of that idea. So I think people who are in a situation like yours, where they don't have anything yet, they're just not in the habit of taking that idea and turning it into form. And once you've done it enough times, your brain starts taking care of that by itself, I think. I think your brain just starts, it just knows it like muscle memory does. So I think a large part of it is muscle memory. I don't think I have more ideas than most people. I think I have the habit of turning those ideas into something that has form. So that's the part that makes me sound really cool. But the part that isn't as cool is that I don't really like relaunching things. And I don't like drawing attention to something old. It's like it has old energy and I just want to move on. And so if I had a product that performed really well last year, most people in that spot would sort of strategically say, okay, how can we relaunch this? What's a good new launch sequence? What do we do to bring it back into the world? And I just have no interest in it. I have no problem with it. I just have no interest in doing it myself, which means that eventually I'm going to need money again. So I have to make something new.
Wow. So do you have a way, as I said before, before we record, I'm not going to ask you for like 7 steps to anything, but now I want 7 steps to like taking this idea and putting it into a product idea like that you can create, because you say it's muscle memory and you've done this enough times and you probably work as a coach with people doing this.
Yeah.
You're right. We have ideas. We all have a ton of ideas, but mm-hmm. it's putting them into the form of a product.
Mm-hmm. It's a bitch, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Okay. So you want 7 steps?
I don't know how many it takes.
And he thought this was going to be
the first one.
And he thought this was going to be a 30-minute interview. He's cute, isn't he? Okay. Well, okay. Give me an example. Give me an example idea, interview boy.
An example idea?
Yeah, like something that you could make that you thought that would be cool to make for my audience.
Okay, so let's say like, okay, actually here's something. This is actually happening. And I apparently have 2 weeks to create this. A friend of mine, Sean D'Souza, who I think you know.
Yeah.
He's put me my feet to the fire and wants me to create. I've been, like, I write for some other people. People come to my site, they see it once and then they leave. They never come back. So now my Monday blog post goes out and I spend $10 a week showing that post on Facebook to people who have touched my site in the last 30 days.
Cool.
Basic retargeting. To him, yeah. It's just like, how are you? What are you doing? And so he wants me to create a small report, but filled with like my philosophy sort of and everything about it and a step-by-step how to do it and then to sell it.
Okay. How much do you think you'd charge? Is it like a $7 report or is it like
$39? And I was like, where did $39 come from? He's like, dartboard pricing. So, fair enough, Sean.
$39 because I said so and I'm Sean D'Souza.
Exactly.
Okay. Speaking of ADD, the thought that keeps popping into my head is I put the psycho in Psychotactics. And I'm like, I can't. I'm sorry, Sean. I didn't mean it. It's just popping into my head. I can't not say it out loud. I'm sorry. I have outbursts. Okay. Well, what you do is, first of all, you commit to sitting down and doing it. And you take it out of that mental fog of, I don't know, and I suck, and it's hard, and I don't know what to do. And you just sort of like put that aside for the minute. And you go, okay, I can go through that mental belaboring of my own self-doubt later.
Plenty of time for that.
Exactly. Life is long. There's plenty of time to self-obsess. So we'll just put that aside and we can pick up the raging self-doubt later. And you sit down and you just sort of create the first stabs at order. You take your idea and your crappy, ill-formed philosophy of how it might come together. And you say, okay, and you just write it down. And very much like Anne Lamott, I think it's Anne Lamott, talks about the shitty first draft. Maybe that was Nora Roberts. I don't know. Stephen King, Donald Trump. I don't know. Some person. And you just like dump it on there and it looks stupid. And then you're embarrassed and self-conscious and you think that you're a moron for putting these fragments down and calling them an idea. And then you stay with that process long enough to turn the fragments into something greater than that.
That's it. That's where we fall off.
Yeah.
Staying with it long enough to do it.
Yeah.
Willing to admit that it's going to be kind of just a mess at the beginning.
Yeah.
Stick with it long enough.
Yeah. And I would actually add, we often say a mess and we hear people like who have done what it is that we're trying to do. And they say it's a mess because in their head, that's what it is. That's the only word they can use. The reality is, especially for somebody who's new, it's less likely to be a mess and more likely to be blank. And so I think we go into it prepared for a mess. And so we make our little mind map. I make mind maps the old school way that they taught you in like fourth grade, where you write a word in the middle. So like I'm doing a product right now on how to run a sale. So if in the middle I wrote how to run a sale and then I circled it. And my idea was that eventually there would be a bunch of little spokes coming out from that circle with little things on them. And that those would have little spokes that come out from them and it would flesh out to be this cool thing. What actually happens when you're new is you write how to run a killer sale and you circle it and you have one spoke and it says, what's for sale? And you're done. Like, it's what you got. I think that's actually what happens. And so we're prepared for a mess. And we're like, yeah, I'm an entrepreneur. It's cool. I'm a creative person. I'm a writer. I'm cool with a mess. I'm cool with shitty first draft. And it's not a shitty first draft. It's two words on a piece of paper. And you just feel like I was ready and braced for chaos. This isn't chaos. It's emptiness.
Which you weren't ready for.
Which you weren't ready for. And then you go and get drunk in a corner.
Is there any part where that actually fits into the process?
There are many parts where that fits into the process.
Good. Otherwise, I don't want to take part in this process.
Exactly. That's the point. You do this so you can buy better booze. That's really what it's all about.
At what point in this stage do you begin thinking about how am I going to market and sell this?
Are you asking what I do or what I think other people should do?
No, what you do. I want to know what you do.
I don't really spend a lot of time on that. To be fair, probably because I've done it so many times, it's just sort of a routine now. I will often start just getting a feel for something and getting a feel for whether this is something that needs a lot of hype and explanation and launch content or whether it's just a sort of announcement. My launches usually tend to follow a pretty predictable pattern. And so sometimes I'll feel like, okay, this one's going to need some high touch and this one's going to need a, yo, it's $27, buy it, idiot. You kind of look to see what the feel of the product kind of lends itself towards. But I'm pretty lazy when it comes to promotion. I generally tend to do as little as I can get away with.
So you don't like to resell products that are old and feel have that weight to them sort of being old, but you don't mind doing that with your launch sequences?
It's a launch, a launch process.
Process, cool.
Not a launch sequence. I'm not going to send you the same email.
Right, okay.
But my launches are usually around the same length. They usually have around the same number of contact points. I have a pretty standardized process at this point, which on a level is done because it's on a level, it's strategic. This seems to work and it seems to work fairly consistently. And when I remove this element, I lose sales. And when I put it back, I regain them. So there's a strategic component to it. And there's also simply an economy of scale. It's just easier to do it the old way.
So for a product that's not super expensive and super high touch, you're figuring, and you can do the standard way, is your sequence for launching 7 days or like 14-ish?
Depending.
I'm trying to think of how long it's been in my inbox that I see the offer and it's in there somewhere.
More often than not, it's 8 days.
8 days?
Yeah. Tuesday to Tuesday or Thursday to Thursday.
Wow. Tuesday to Tuesday. I like that. So, okay. So this is kind of fascinating. What
the kind of fascinating. Can we give this? Can I quote that as a testimony? I'm going to put it in my header. Itybiz.com. Kind of fascinating.
Well, you've this is not how these interviews typically go, but from the very first question, you've set the standard of this is not how it's going to be. So I'm just
never going to be invited back.
Well, you might. Okay, so the next part is, I was expecting you to answer with the marketing portion, because you're a marketer, that you were going to give me one of those answers like, I don't even start creating a product until I know how to market it. You know, you've heard that before.
I have.
And that's not you.
No.
If it's something easy, not high touch, you know the pattern afterwards, and you're not thinking necessarily about that process before even creating it.
No. And to be fair, I have an incredibly privileged situation on my hands. Let's not lie. I have a very loyal list.
People love you.
Some do.
Yeah.
That's true. Some do. Awesome. I'm remaining non-committal in the amount of the sum. But yes, I have a very loyal list. Statistically speaking, most people who buy something from me have bought at least half of the items that were available for purchase since they got on the list. And so I'm in many cases talking to the same kind of people who have the same kind of priorities, who have the same kind of preference. I sell things at a price point that people are generally comfortable with, or the people who have wound up here are generally comfortable with, otherwise they would have left. And so at this point, it is a fairly well-oiled machine. And I've created a content strategy, she says, with air quotes, strategy that involves me doing whatever random harebrained shit I think of and putting it on the internet. And that has become a signature of sorts. And so because of that, the marketing component can really be, you know what would be awesome? And then just doing that. And I think more people can get away with that than think they can. But I think most of us don't think that we can get away with that. And so I did this the first time in forever that I did a big, like, proper launch with videos and stuff and makeup was for a class called List Explosion last year. And at some point I realized when I was speccing out my slides that this was really boring. And I was like, wow, I wouldn't watch this. And so I decided that we needed a co-host who was a cat, and his name was Mr. Fluffkins. And he just interjected whenever it started to get potentially boring by basically hurling assaults at me or narcissistically talking about himself. And I was so enamored with this idea that I just ran with it. And Fluffkins got progressively more narcissistic and more vulgar, frankly, as the series went on. To the point where at one point I was making I think it was the last video. It was like 3 a.m. and I made the most off-color joke, which I will not repeat. And it just, I was like, even you can't say this, Naomi. And I was like, yeah, sure I can. And that becomes the marketing strategy. The marketing strategy is, you know, it would be hilarious. And then I make that.
Wow. And then you sell that as, it's not just like, explode your list. It's literally like you and this Fluffkins cat, probably.
Yeah, me and a stock photography cat talking shit about each other. And that's the launch sequence, really.
And then looking at your store on your site, there's 6 products for sale. That product doesn't exist on there.
No.
Do you literally just make a new one and I only have 6 on my store at any time? The oldest one gets taken off.
That store went up about 6 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
For, I don't know, for the better part of the time that I have had a website, I have not had a store. I make a product, I sell it, and then I tell myself I should really put that in a store later and repeat in 3 to 6 months. So I probably have between 30 and 40, maybe, products that are just sitting on mine and a few people's hard drives out there in the world. Some of them I can't even find. And yeah, this store is new. It's one of those things that I realize that when I'm going to talk about things like passive income, I should probably at least appear to be making passive income myself. So I finally, after many years, said, perhaps you should put the store back up. And I did about 6 weeks ago.
So before, you would just sell a product during this launch, this 8-day typically launch, mm-hmm. and then literally just that was it.
That was it. Oh.
Do people buy from the store?
Yes.
Wow. Just putting it up there.
It's amazing. Like, you put a product with a sales page in a place called store or shop, for example, and you get traffic to your website and a certain percentage of those people click on the store. Subsequently click on products within the store, and then some of those people send you cash. It's a beautiful thing.
Are these your best-selling products, though, or are these literally your last 6 products that you chose?
They are more recent because there has been a very distinct style change in the products that I've made over the years. I've stopped being such a lecturing, pompous ass and have made things a lot more accessible and usable as opposed to just lecturing about theory for hours on end. So these are the more recent, more modern, less lecture, more practical, usable products.
Worksheets, templates.
Yeah.
Workshops.
Yeah.
In 60 minutes.
Stuff you can do in an hour or so.
Very consumable. Mm-hmm. And then there's this Chris at ItiBiz. She'll decide. She'll help you if you have questions. Chris is part of your team?
Yeah.
Is she your team? Do you have more people?
We have more people temporarily. We used to have more people than that until I realized I was ludicrously overstaffed.
Fair enough. What does everyone do?
Graphic-y stuff, techie stuff, things that are in many cases completely above my head, and I'm not even entirely sure what they do. But I have some good people that I can sort of give them a vague sketch of my eventual iteration, and then they come back with something that looks a lot like that, and I'm a little hazy on how we get from A to B.
Wow. So you are then just the creator. The content, I'm assuming, is still you, and the products are still you.
Yeah.
The copy is still you?
Yeah.
Always.
Although I'm talking to a copywriter tomorrow.
Really?
First time ever.
Why? What's bringing this up?
Well, because I was on Twitter, and I saw a link to a blog post, and I'm trying to steal other people's links to blog posts so I can fill my own co-schedule with them. And so I'm just rampantly, ragingly consuming as much content as I possibly can. And I found this thing just to look at it to see if I could retweet it. And within about 15 seconds, I was like, okay, whoa, she's really good. And that doesn't usually happen with copywriters, because usually copywriters are really copywritery. And that doesn't fit my style very well. So I saw this and I was like, well, I'll talk to you. So who knows? Maybe I might for once not write my own copy.
Wow. We don't know who she is, though.
I can't tell you.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't think you would. Otherwise, you probably would have by now.
Yeah. You're good at this after all these years. You're starting to get a sense, I think.
So what else do you want to talk about, Naomi?
What do you want to talk about? This is your big Barbara Walters moment.
I want to talk about digital nomadery and travel while working. Because this is something that you have thought about for a long time. You've been in business yourself on the internet, where you don't have to be in any certain place at any time, for 10 years now. It's a long time.
And tell me about it.
I believe recently you've just given up the apartment in your city and decided to go.
Yeah.
Where have you gone?
I have gone other places in Canada. Folks at home, if you're thinking of any kind of digital nomad-y kind of lifestyle, Canada's very cold and there's a lot of snow, and all of the blogs that you might read about being a digital nomad or location independence, like John and I were saying before the call started, everybody's in Chiang Mai. You may want to follow them. There's a reason. Like, there's a reason they're in Chiang Mai. So I bummed around some places in Ontario. I bummed around some places in Quebec. I did a lot of travel in the States in the fall of last year, and I have relatives in Europe. I'm probably going to go descend on them for a while.
In Europe?
Yeah.
So is digital nomadery everything you expected it to be?
No. No, but I don't think I really had my eyes wide open going into it. So I really think that's more my fault than the lifestyles. I think once you if you put something on a pedestal for too long before taking action on it, I don't think it's ever going to be what you think it's going to be. Just because you put it on this pedestal to such a degree. People get like that about business, right? Like, they think, oh, when I have a business, it's going to be so awesome.
Yeah.
Kind of. Sometimes.
Parts of it are. Parts of it aren't.
Exactly. It's kind of like life, really. Yeah. So no, it is not what I expected it to be, but that's more my fault. And the more that I actually try to think consciously about it, instead of being like, I'm homesick, I miss having a house, I start thinking, okay, what would Tony Robbins do here? Well, like, as opposed to simply moping, could you consider perhaps having a more solutions-oriented approach? And the more I actually think of isolating, why isn't this my Disney princess dream? And what perhaps could I take some personal responsibility for making it better? It's amazing how much better it gets.
Right. And it would have been probably boring as hell if it had been everything you expected it to be.
Yeah, I'd also drink a lot.
There you go.
Because that's what it is, right? It's like beaches and booze.
Beaches, booze, but also there should be some business in there, I'm assuming.
Why do you have to bring up such a prosaic topic? Yes, I suppose business should be involved.
Is that the struggle? Staying focused, staying motivated, working, actually like continuing on in business?
I think it's more when you're at home. Well, this is true for me anyway. When I'm at home, I have a lot of routines in place that I'm not even aware of that make certain things, certain business things, easier or more intuitive. Pick me up and stick me somewhere that isn't home, even though it technically has all of the elements in place. I think that's a large part of why it's different than what I thought. I think I thought as long as I had a fast computer and access to the internet, we'd be good to go. But realizing like the tiniest parts of your routine, just like they change everything in this sort of weird butterfly domino effect. And So just kind of getting back in the saddle and taking responsibility for your routines rather than letting them, like, rather than falling back on the organic ones you've always had. That's, I think, a big part of it. I think I'm just really disoriented and confused a lot of the time.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned this ADD and sort of like, but having really good short-term discipline and sort of being able to take these ideas and turn them into real tangible things. Do you use, or did you, when you were at home, use sort of more physical ways to do this, like whiteboards or pieces of paper, things that you might not have now in front of you at your disposal because you might be at a coffee shop or you might be somewhere else?
That's a really good question, actually. Yeah.
That's a really good question, actually. 35 minutes into it. That was awesome. Thank you.
Perfect. Well, I'll put yours in my header and you can put that in yours. Yeah, I had a desk, come to think of it. And amazingly, if you write a note to yourself and you put it on your desk, generally speaking, barring acts of God, you can leave for however long you want to, minutes, days, weeks, and come back, and that note will still be in the same place as a physical reminder. When you have to actually be more linear about it, you can't really rely on sticky notes and scraps of paper and stuff like that anymore. So yeah, I think the physical component has really been a factor.
So you do use that? Because that's me. I'm like, sticky notes and freaking like those little cards, whatever they're called, like that you just write on.
Index cards.
Yeah. Like literally my desk has them always. Because you're right, I can come back here at any time. Even if I go to the coffee shop to work in my city, I still have to come back here, put the laptop down and be like, oh yeah, I still got to do this recording.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, right. I meant to do that thing. When you don't have that physical reminder that you've really, frankly, come to rely on as a crutch, you don't have that physical reminder saying, remember that thing? You often don't remember that thing. Surprise.
Right. So it's the struggle is finding those, but in more of a digital sort of sense.
Yeah. I started using Trello. I'm not using it very well, but I started using it and it's kind of helping. So that's cool.
It can. Yeah. But it's
if you use it.
Exactly. It's something you have to get in the habit of using, which is hard to do, but I have been doing it and it works well. But I've struggled with this, like going somewhere for 2 months with the family and it's like, I'm going to work. And then I don't. I just literally enough to just keep things going the way they have to. But
exactly. The minimum viable. Yeah.
Right. And so I don't think that with that, I don't think I can do it long term because I won't be happy if I'm in the same place a year from now kind of thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a different lifestyle. And I've always had the thought that people who move to a new lifestyle, as a rule, this is not true in all cases, but as a rule, once seekers, people who have been seeking something better, something more, something that's a better fit, once they actually find it, that's when they usually stop blogging about it because there's nothing more to say. And so most of the literature you're going to read on any kind of significant lifestyle change is going to effectively be written by people who have the aspiration, not who have actually achieved it. And somebody said something to me, once you move to Belize, you don't usually write a blog about moving to Belize. You're hanging out doing Belize things, not writing a blog about it. And so I think it's that constant quest to find the right fit, whether some people travel periodically or they travel all the time, or they actually thought, yeah, I'm going to be a digital nomad. It's going to be great. And then they realize they're totally homesick and this sucks. And they're just going to go buy a house. And all of those different incarnations, it's hard to have role models. And so it's hard to sort of predict what it's going to be like, because as soon as people get it, they stop writing about it, having a podcast about it, hanging out in forums about it, talking on Twitter about it.
Are you going to keep talking about it?
I only really talked about it once, so I don't know if I'll talk about it again.
So you're going to fall into the same trap that everyone else does?
Probably, but I never wrote a digital nomad blog in the first place.
Right,
so
okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I feel no such obligation.
Right, except it's fascinating. And it's fascinating to, especially if it's not all roses and you admit that, which typically is what you do. Most people, I think it goes contrary to, I mean, if you wanted something so bad and now you get to achieve it, you don't want to say, actually, this is terrible.
Or more accurately, this is terrible and it's probably all my fault. It's terrible. That's probably because I did it wrong. Yes. Exactly. Now most people are not really inclined to say that.
Exactly. All right, Naomi. Well, speaking of going places, I guess we should go somewhere.
All right.
I want to ask this one final question that I ask everyone, but I feel like you're not going to answer it.
Probably not, but you've got a good eye for pattern recognition.
So, Itty Biz, we haven't even really talked about it in passing, except for like your store, products, and the fact that you've been doing it and coaching people and helping people, small businesses mostly, for nearly 10 years. Mm-hmm. Could you now sort of tell us a bit more about it? Give us sort of the pitch, why people should go check it out?
You're so right. I don't have an answer for that.
All right. Well, that wasn't even the question. This was literally just like...
Jesus. That was just the warm-up? Okay.
No, I'm not asking you the question. You're not going to answer it.
But I at least want to know what the question is. I want to know what I'm not answering.
Okay. It's a long one. Okay. This idea I'm working with, calling the entrepreneurial gap, which I think you would have a great answer for if you would humor me. But this idea of us as entrepreneurs, creators, dreamers, whatever, we're always, I think, projecting our personal successes into the future. So no matter what we accomplish from the outside, you look like you're kicking total ass. But to you, it's in 1 month when you get to hit Europe, or 6 months when you hit that other metric. That's when maybe you'll start to see yourself as successful. Yet you and I both know that you're going to set bigger things into the future at that moment. Mm-hmm. And so you end up in this gap where it doesn't matter what you accomplish, it's always in the future and it's never in the future. So I would just like, if you could, Naomi, stop, turn around, look behind you. 10 years in business, highs, lows, wins, losses. Just tell me how you feel about it up until today.
That is a good question, and I will actually answer it to break from my pattern. What do you mean by how do I feel? Like, what do you, like, do I feel I've succeeded? Do you?
No, it's literally just a reflection on all of it until now. Not where you're going, not what you want to do, not what you wanted to accomplish. Just, I don't know. It's life. It's business. It's creation of you and other things. How does it feel, what you've been through?
It feels awesome to have kind of come of age, come of business age, during an era that was so fertile for it. It's really, really exciting, no matter how jaded and cynical I get, and I do. It's really exciting to be in business now and to be at a sort of sometimes front lines, sometimes bleeding edge, sometimes pulling back from that, but realizing that things are changing and becoming possible so quickly, and things that my parents and grandparents never could have done, I can do in minutes. And it's just really cool to be able, like we were talking about earlier with projects and things, to be able to look back and go, wow, all those things that I thought of doing, and I mean like at the very micro level, I wanted to write that book. I wanted to do that website redesign. I wanted to be on a podcast with John Nastar. But I could just do it. And that I did. And you look around, you're like, wow, done some pretty cool shit, actually.
You have. That's a good answer. Thank you for it. Itty Biz. This is how Naomi says it in her sidebar of her website. Hi and welcome. I'm Naomi. I turn smart, quirky people into smart, quirky entrepreneurs. Come play at Itty Biz because better mindset equals better marketing equals magic. Sorry, better mindset plus better marketing equals magic. That's Itty Biz. I don't even know how long I've been reading Itty Biz. Probably for 8 years at this point. It's been a long time. I'm really, really, truly happy that you finally decided to stop by. I just asked, didn't I? Jeez.
I'm not even going to comment on that.
But it's been fun. And this conversation went differently than most, but it was fun. It was damn fun. And I thank you for it.
I'm kind of afraid to send traffic to this podcast because people will hear this and go, I'll never get asked to another podcast interview again ever by anyone, let alone you.
I think you will.
Oh, maybe.
These aren't the worst kind of interviews at all, like, or the worst kind of answers to questions. Even when you're telling me you're not answering the question, the worst kind of answers are the ones where you're almost answering it before I'm done asking it because you think I know what I asked you.
Don't
care, and you're just like, I already have this one. And it's like, oh my God, we're not playing politician here. I'm trying to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, I guess they have their own little PR department at the Itty Biz level, which must be really expensive. We should probably have compassion for those people. Okay, cool.
All right, ittybiz.com is the website. Naomi is on Twitter, probably way too much, but she's at Naomi Dumford. And Psychotactics is Sean D'Souza, who we were talking about. That's his website. A link to all three of those things in the show notes of this. So when you're done walking, jogging, working out, whatever it is you're doing right at this moment, they'll be there on Hack the Entrepreneur waiting for you. Naomi, once again, thank you so much for joining me. I really do appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. It's been real.
Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by Studio Press Sites, a proven solution that gives you the ease of an all-in-one website builder with the flexible power of WordPress. It's perfect for bloggers, podcasters, and affiliate marketers, as well as those selling physical products, digital downloads, and membership programs. Check out all the innovative features today at studiopress.com/hack. And as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you get your first month absolutely free. That's studiopress.com/hack. All right, well, that conversation went a lot of places I was not expecting it to go. Some places I was expecting it to go, some places I wasn't. But it was a lot of fun to be a part of. I've admired Naomi and her work for years now. She writes extremely well. She's really smart, and she's got an extremely, it's unusual and authentic sort of take on marketing. And the way she can do it is really, really impressive. And I'm really happy I got to sit down and talk to her, even though she completely derailed my questions and my conversation. I'm going to let it slide. So taking part in it was, it was uncomfortable, it was awkward at times, but it was fun. But I'm really looking forward to this part of the show now, the part where I get to go back and I get to listen to it. Listen to it the way you got to hear it, and I'm hoping that it isn't too awkward. So I go back, and I listen through it again, and then I listen through it again. That second time through the conversation, there was something Naomi had said, and I had missed it. I had glossed over it the first two times. I guess I was just kind of caught up in the wreckage of this conversation, and I had missed it. But it was so very clear this second time through. It was that one thing that Naomi said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
It takes a lot of short-term discipline. I cannot pull off long-term discipline, but I can pull it off in short chunks. And I can just, like, I know the flaws in my brain well enough now that I know that I have to take that, I call it a whirlpool, that sort of whirlpool moment of being able to put your total focus and energy onto a project. And I know that if I just, like, give it my absolute everything, that by the time I'm like, let's drink champagne and get pedicures, it will have taken on enough momentum that even if I totally suck, even I can finish it.
And that's the hack. Naomi, this is good. I love this. And I know that you out there listening, is you probably get a ton from this too. This idea of, it takes a lot of, the key here is short-term discipline. And so if you can focus that whirlpool moment that Naomi talks about, if you can stay focused long enough. So I love that she has the clarity and sort of the self-awareness to know her downfalls. It's why I love to ask people what they're good at and why what they think they're terrible at. Because you need to know these things, not necessarily so you can change them, but so that you can work around them and through them and over them, whatever it takes. But Naomi knows that she can get distracted. She wants to go drink champagne and get pedicures, all these things. But she knows that if she can get that whirlpool moment, that absolute focus on what she needs to do right now, that by the time her brain gets distracted with something else, she's already finished what she needs to create and created enough momentum to have it succeed. And to her not to cause a failure of it and to get into her own way. So I love this for that reason. Finding that momentum, making sure you know where your sort of whirlpool moment is, and then allowing yourself or pushing yourself to stay focused for just that amount of time that you need to. We're not talking super long-term. I mean, Naomi, in part of the conversation, said that her quote-unquote launches for email sequence that she uses are 8 days long, and she knows what works, and so she can pre-write those during that whirlpool moment and then have it extend out so that she can get distracted with champagne and anything else that she wants to. Find these times in your day-to-day, find these times within your projects to execute, get the momentum, and then you can get distracted as much as you need to after. Naomi, thank you so much for joining. Thanks for tearing this whole show apart. And just thanks for doing what you do. All right, that was fun. Hacktheentrepreneur.com. It's the site. Head over there. I'm going to get links to some stuff that I dig of Naomi's and things we talked about in this conversation will also be over there for you. All right, it's been fun. Thank you so much again for stopping by. I truly do appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.